For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome in to 11 Personnel, presented by Monticello Bank, where today we're doing our coaching carousel recap. I'm Nick Roush, he's Adam Luckett. The coaching carousel, it spins hard, it spins fast in college football, and this was one of the wildest ones we've ever seen, Luckett, so we've got plenty to discuss. We've got a wrap-up from the combine. James, I'm sorry, but yes, you're right. We're never on time. But also suck it, buddy. You know, stuff happens. It turns out some of our technical difficulties weren't from the internet exclusively at the combine. There was also some other things happening that we didn't know about. We're figuring out, we're powering through, because we got to talk about all the craziness, all the chaos that happened in this college football offseason.
We do. Are you recovered from the combine there, Nick? You're dealing with a little something.
I'm still hurt. Still hurt, you know, but like, come on. You rub some dirt on it, you get to feeling better, you know. That's what we're playing through now. I will say I was like almost completely down and out Monday after feeling great on Sunday. So I don't know. We're riding a roller coaster. We're making it through. We're feeling good right now, although we're running on fumes from a long day of blogging. So can't hit completely empty on the tank during the show, because the graphic that we have made, it's preposterous, the various moves that were made throughout college football. So I'm excited to get to that. Before we get to that, though, Luckett, big combine takes / surprises. From the event, I think I'm probably just most like, wow, I can't believe Drew Phillips is what he is right now, with his testing and everything. I just did not anticipate. I remember when Jim Nagy said in the middle of the year, like, yeah, the NFL guys like him. Did not anticipate his stock to be soaring as high as it is, with just a little over 6 weeks until the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think from a Kentucky lens, I think Drew Phillips is probably the big one. I also think, like, Devin Leary, I think, did well through that event. Like, it seems like he's going to get picked. I think I wouldn't say it's a lock, but I would say probably a safe bet. And I don't know if anyone felt like that in November. So I think he's going to get picked here. And so I think that was maybe a little bit of a surprise that maybe he had more buzz than maybe we originally thought.
Mm-hmm.
Big picture, the whole Marvin Harrison situation is pretty weird.
Is it weirder than Caleb Williams not doing the health evals?
I think a little bit, because Marvin Harrison's dad has been through the NFL thing before, so they know, and what that he expect. Didn't do, yeah, they knew. Like, I just thought that was weird. Like, to say he's not gonna come and then come, basically the only reason I think he arrived there was to do the eval, the med eval, and then to show up and then the no show at the press conference. I thought that was odd. Caleb Williams, I mean, his dad just interviewed agents and just decided not to hire one, essentially. So the fact that that's kind of a circus is not a huge surprise when you look at it that way, that they're going the non-agent route. I'm not sure if Harrison's doing that as well or if they're doing something different, but I thought that was just odd that he just didn't show up, even though he was there. I mean, like, it's a 10-minute painless press conference for the most part, right? Like, there's not much you're going to say or do. Usually, you know, the only thing that really goes viral there is if you say something like that you're going to do during a workout like Will Levis last year, or if you say, like, if you're Joe Burrow and says, yeah, I don't, like, the Bengals could pick me, I'll play for the Bengals. So I just didn't really understand that.
The combine interviews I listened to, so we were a part of at least four. I recorded a couple more talking to people. And then I was listening to, so John Hale went to all the Georgia guys and was asking them about Jamin Dumas Johnson and Brock Vandegrift. So I got tipped off by one of our Georgia writers. Hey, check out our videos. There's a lot of guys talking about Brock and Pop on here. So I was going through those, and they're all the same. Like, every combine interview is, have you had a formal interview with the Cowboys? If you could show them one play on tape, what would it be? Who is the hardest guy you went against this year? Like, it's just very, you know, generic type stuff. So to your point, I don't think Marvin Harrison would have had to face the music too much. Did he just not – is Ryan Day, is he like Kirby Smart when it comes to interviews or something? Do they have a similar approach to Ohio State?
I think they have pretty good access there at Ohio State to the players. So I just think – that's why I thought it was just – odd. I really did thought it was a little odd, but not that it matters, you know.
Yeah,
he's going
top
he's five.
Gonna
he's going to be the
five,
first non-quarterback probably taken. I think is a safe bet, or it's a heavy favorite. The Arizona Cardinals is a popular mock for him there with, I think they had the fourth pick. So it's just I don't know why, but he's just deciding not to do anything, or not that, but deciding like to
him
go
and Hall.
Rogue almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that to me, that was the weirdest part. Everything else was normal. You have guys back out that didn't want to throw, guys that don't test. That happens every year now. So that is what it is. But then you'd have guys that do test, and I think there's guys, obviously, that it's been reported that have helped themselves. With good news.
I'd like to say my one NFL story that I can't really get right now, aside from just the imminent free agency moves, which, by the way, Josh Allen going to get paid $24 million on the franchise tag this year for the Jaguars. So, decent little one-year contract. I don't understand J.J. McCarthy. The buzz surrounding him when it doesn't, like, I just don't, doesn't necessitate, I don't see it. Like, he didn't throw particularly well either. He was one of the few guys that threw, and he wasn't on the money there, and I know that's not everything, but feels like he's just the most average kind of quarterback, and what's his ceiling, Kirk Cousins or something? And I mean, I guess some teams would love to have that, but like, I don't know. I'm coming from a place where I'm technically a Steelers fan, so I've watched bad quarterback play. I know exactly what it looks like. I can clearly identify it, and would J.J. McCarthy potentially be an upgrade of what I've seen over the last few years? Maybe. But I don't know. Like, there's just something about him. He just seems very mid to me. Just the middest of all mids. Basically Jim Harbaugh, you know, reincarnate 30 years later. Of just like, oh, pretty good athlete, like decent thrower of the football, but like, is he going to win you any games? Like, I don't know. I don't think so.
I think with McCarthy, that Michigan just didn't need a quarterback to win a national championship, essentially. So when the chips were down and the offensive line coach is running things, they decided to run the football and play defense. And so they didn't, in big games, like big games you watch later in the year, he didn't really light the world on fire. But I will say, when he did throw, and when you go and do play, if you go game by game and chart him, he had some of the more better efficiency numbers of any quarterback in the country. So, like, he was putting up numbers. He just has a small sample size because he's throwing 16, 17 times a game. Now, against Iowa, he wasn't very good. Against Alabama, he wasn't great. And against Washington, they still didn't really need to throw the ball. I mean, they got out to that big lead. They busted a few runs early. But he played good against Ohio State. I think with him, Nick, you got to look at, this guy was a five-star recruit coming out of high school, so he's always been pretty highly ranked. And then he comes in, and when he becomes Michigan's starter, essentially, he replaces the guy that just took him to the playoff, and then they go and have their two best seasons with him. So I definitely think there is something there. I wouldn't put him in the top tier with May and Caleb Williams, but I think there's definitely he's right there potentially getting close to Jay Daniels, and then I think it's just your preference, what you're looking for, flavor of the month. Another thing with McCarthy, he's only 20 years old. Like, he can't but go buy a beer yet. You know, he's still a young dude.
That's crazy.
And so if you're talking about upside and you've seen what you just put on tape the last 2 years, and you, and it just what it's I think it's in the eye of the beholder what you're really looking for, because he does make some, I think if you watch Michigan, he's in an NFL type structure. So that's something I think people are going to like. And then I think he's shown there's upside. It's just how far does that upside reach is, I think, really the big question you have to answer when you're evaluating. But he's going to go in the first round. He's going to go top 15. Someone's going to take him. Someone's probably going to trade up to take him. It's just where does that fall on round one.
Speaking of Michigan, they're one of the big movers and shakers in the coaching carousel this year. You need to move your butt on over to Monticello Brewing, 21 branches in 14 counties across the Commonwealth. Visit one of their convenient locations or see how Monticello Bank can finance your future at mbcbank.com. They've been in business for over 128 years because at Monticello Bank, it's where people matter. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Stop on in a Monticello Bank today. Look at the... We had a coaching carousel where a guy led his alma mater to its first national title, sole national title in about 100 years, and he's leaving his post, and it's not the biggest move in the sport. That's how crazy the coaching carousel was this year. And I think my biggest takeaway from all of this is the national championship coach left, and it had a very, very small ripple effect around the carousel, and yet it has the biggest impact on Kentucky. I think you could say Kentucky was a huge winner in this cycle because Harbaugh left. He took Steve Klingscale with him. And as much as you probably believe that Sherrone Moore is going to keep that thing humming, your most annoying thorn in your side from a recruiting standpoint is now gone. And I don't think that that's something we've really drove home enough so far, because it's still early in the recruiting cycle. But that's going to be significant recruiting the state of Ohio and what appears to be just a loaded 2025 class in the Buckeye State.
Yeah, I think this cycle always be looked at as the Nick Saban ripple effect he had on the sport, just show the gravity he brought to the sport. Nick, he left, and what happened when he left, you saw changes at Washington, you saw changes at South Alabama, you saw changes at Buffalo, you saw changes at San Jose State, you saw changes at Arizona. Mm-hmm. So, like, just that is just like, man, like, all the jobs he eliminated / created there just for deciding to retire. So we're always going to remember it for that. But I think when looking, and so that matters, I think, from a Kentucky looking at the SEC lens, is Alabama's still going to be Alabama, but it's going to help a lot of people to knock them down a few pegs. And so what effect does that have on Kentucky? We don't know. We'll have to see. But I think the bigger one, right, is this Michigan one. If you're just looking at mainly from a day-to-day kind of high school recruiting operation, Michigan had given it to Kentucky a few times. The Kentucky kind of returned the favor, I think, in some recent recruitments.
Right.
But you get Klingscale now with the Los Angeles Chargers. Harbaugh and most of the big dogs on that staff are with the Chargers. Defense coordinator Jesse Minter is with the Chargers. So it makes Michigan kind of, we'll see what they are with Sherrone Moore. And then another big one, I think, is, and I'm going to get into this kind of fit later, but Michigan State makes a change, and they bring in Jonathan Smith from Oregon State, who's only specifically worked on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So how does that work? And they didn't necessarily have a reputation of being recruiters at Oregon State. It was more find undervalued players, develop them, turn them into good college players and draft picks. And so how does that look when he's in Ohio recruiting? So what effect does that have on Kentucky? Does it allow them to maybe have a little bit more success there in Ohio with Michigan and Michigan State? I think you're seeing Kentucky, you know, they selectively recruit Ohio already. It's always been a big part, but there's some years where it's be two or three, and there's some years where it'll be six or seven. And so does that change? Does it become more six, seven, eight kind of range when you're battling, you know, Michigan, Michigan State with these new coaching staffs? So not only with Michigan, I think one of the big takeaways I had is a Michigan State changing over and hiring a Pac-12 staff that's not the SEC, that's not going to have the SEC style that Mel Tucker brought to East Lansing from a recruiting standpoint.
Yeah, yeah. Or even just somebody regional like Jason Candle from Toledo who would have connections to work around there.
And I'm glad you brought him up, Nick, because to me, he is kind of the big loser in all of this. Nick, there were eight in-house promotions made this summer, 31 hires. There were three retreads hired. So that's 11 of 31. That's a pretty good chunk of the hiring cycle. And none of them candle. Like, you know, like there's guys that got promoted here that basically just do not have the resume of Jason Candle. And so how did he not get hired? It's really kind of a head scratcher. And it makes you wonder, like, are you better off just being even a position coach on a high level Power Five program than being a winning head coach in a MAC school? Kent State's not a winning MAC school, but we saw Sean Lewis leave, goes to Colorado, gets demoted, but still finds a better job out of it. It's being San Diego State's head coach.
That was what I was going to ask you. Was it worth it for Sean Lewis? Was that ultimately the right move to go from Kent State, eat crap for a year at Colorado, score a lot of points, but eat crap. And
I actually think Deion helped him because they pulled him and then the offense wasn't as good. And so he gets to go to, like, Nick, San Diego State is the second or third best job in the MAC. Boise State is one, and then it's probably them or Fresno State, those two, three. Those are probably the best two. And then Colorado State, I think, is in there too. But that's a good job for him. So, I think it worked. I think that was the right move for him at the time because Kent State, you're fighting like hell just to go 6-6, 5-7. And you got to play three bye games against Georgia, Michigan, Kentucky, or, you know, Big Ten or SEC school, Missouri, whoever you're going to throw in there. And so that's 0-3 out the gate. You know, you go 5-3 in MAC play, and that's still not guaranteeing that you will get to a bowl game. And so it's a tough, tough job. So he decides to reset. He's still fairly young, and he gets a good G5 job, one of the higher level G5 jobs. Like, if you're going to rank G5 jobs, San Diego State might be in the top five. And then in this new era where a G5 team can make the playoff, if they win that conference, they're going to have a great shot at getting it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was the right move.
You mentioned the guys that were promoted. One of those was just Spencer Danielson, who we know that name because Kentucky hired his offensive coordinator, Bush Hamden, Boise State. The other weird promotion hire, I mean, there's a couple when you go through this list that you see on your screen right now. But the big one, the really just like, huh? That UCLA, like, just how that entire situation unfolded, like, it so fascinating because they were so out of it, right? Like, it was definitely it felt like a bad relationship where each side is trying to find an excuse to break up with one another. And then finally Chip Kelly just does it. And he only does it because of some unusual circumstances at Ohio State where they hire Bill O'Brien, but Bill O'Brien wants to go back to New England and goes to Boston College. So now that just all of that is so weird. But like, Chip Kelly's been not so bashful about looking around at other jobs. Was UCLA really not better prepared for it? I know the timing was weird, but they're about to walk into a freaking buzzsaw. in the Big Ten with this guy. And oddly enough, Eric Bieniemy, who, my gosh, that guy, he was cooler than sliced bread as Patrick Mahomes' non-play calling offensive coordinator. He goes and stinks it up for Ron Rivera for a year. And now, I mean, how's he going to have success at UCLA? Like, that dude's never coached a college, right? Like, that, it's going to be terrible. UCLA is for his, like, they were fun when they had DTR and, how was the running back's name? Because last year, Kelly had him, what, 8-4? With Charbonnet and them, right? 8-4, 9-3, something like that. Like,
they were the top 25 most of the year.
Yeah, they were pretty fun. But, man, like, just everything fell apart so quickly, and it feels like it's just going to be a disaster for them moving to the Big Ten.
Yeah, Bieniemy's been in the NFL since 2013, so a decade plus. He was at Colorado, and things did not go well. They were like 2-20 or something ridiculous in that during that tenure. So that's when things really started going south there for Colorado. So, yeah, I mean, he's got some. He worked at UCLA, so he's got some experience there. I think, Nick, on this one, you just look at basketball. I mean, we've heard, if you're paying attention at all, Mick Cronin's just spent all year just whining about their financial situation.
Yeah.
Like, money's kind of important in this sport. And you got to have it. I think that was part of them going to the Big Ten was like,
money's kind of important in this sport. What a great, we got to make that a tagline.
So you that all happens. And then I think they got in a situation where they probably interviewed a few candidates. I think PJ Fleck was linked to that job. I can't remember who else was linked. I think they interviewed some people. You know, it's like, do we really want to go spend money on this guy's buyout? There's a lot of like in-house crap that they're trying to figure out if you kind of dig into it at all. And so they hire a guy who was a running back there, was a star running back for UCLA, has coached there the last 7 years. Like, Deshaun Foster is UCLA football in a lot of ways. And so let's hire one of our own. Let's give him – they gave him a 6-year contract, which I was surprised by. So they're going to give him some time here. Let's give him a 3-year runway and kind of figure out where we're at in this new world. Because they know, I think, that they've got some stuff to figure out. And they're probably going to take it on the chin the first couple years in the Big Ten, just trying to figure out their identity and who they are in this new college football landscape. And so they're going with a guy that they know that, you know, that knows people, probably knows important people there that can maybe get butts in the seats and get cash in their NIL money pool. And so I think that was the whole thinking with him. And let's face it, Chip Kelly is not, you know, Nick, he's not a
spring chicken.
You know, fundraising is very important when you're a big-time college football head coach. It just is. Yeah. Look at Mark Stoops in the Crafts, right? Look at Vince Mero in the Crafts and that relationship. And that goes on at all levels of college football. Dan Lanning, much of his job at Oregon is probably talking to Phil Knight, right? And so that's a big part of it. That's not Chip Kelly's MO, right?
No, he
does not want to do that. Chip Kelly's very much a high school football coach at heart. Like, he just wants to call plays on Friday nights. And I think that's been even admitted by him. That's why he didn't want the Florida job when he took the UCLA job. It's because he just didn't want to be the fishbowl. Now he can go to Ohio State and kind of do that. And that's what he was looking for. He just did. I think he actually liked the portal at first because he was like, oh, this is easy. I could just go get these transfers. It's not as –
I don't have to recruit. Yeah.
It's not the huge time commitment that high school recruiting is and the back and forth. But then now transfer portal is a back and forth because of the NIL financial commitment that has to be made in a lot of these decisions. And so he can go somewhere where he doesn't really have to worry about that as much at Ohio State. And both parties kind of go their separate ways. UCLA's going with one of their own. We'll see how it goes, but I kind of get the decision making process on that when you kind of look at the current situation that they're in as a football program.
To go back to where we started, Luckett, with the dominoes that started falling once Nick Saban announced his retirement, Arizona was another school that was a bit of a mess. Jed Fish was happy to get out of there and step in for Kalen DeBoer. But all of the other dominoes are kind of weird. Here's something that's just wild as hell to say out loud. The Indiana coaching staff from 2020 is now the Alabama coaching staff. The core there, Kane Womack, who spent the last 3 years at South Alabama, and Kalen DeBoer, who had two coaching stops and a pit stop in the national championship game. So, I mean, like, Indiana football is closer to a national championship than Indiana basketball right now.
And the Indiana head coach now has the worst job of the three because he's a Penn State defensive coordinator, which is not a terrible job. Like, you well, could definitely Diaz see.
Just got hired at Duke, so there you go.
You could definitely see a 12-teamer, Nick, where Penn State's playing Alabama potentially, and that is like a storyline on game day, right?
Oh, like, yeah, yeah.
The Indiana Michael Penix, connection.
Michael Penix shows up to give the celebrity pick for the game.
Yeah, you could definitely see that playing.
Yeah.
But yeah, why was Indiana good? They had lightning in a bottle and a coaching staff. Like, yeah. Just three really like high level dudes. And Tom Allen as a defensive coordinator, Kane Womack as a defensive coordinator, and then obviously the biggest star of all, Kalen DeBoer.
You have Womack gone at South Alabama. His biggest rival was John Summerall at Troy. Now, take a look here, and Neil Brown's fortune, he's not one of the names on this coaching list. He got an extension after a great, you know, like it was a put up or shut up kind of time for Neil Brown. He won 9 games this year, but Jared Parker leaving Notre Dame to fill in the role. Troy really has become UK. It's like UK's G League program. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sister school.
They're just pumping them out down there. But I do think it is evident that, like, hey, Sun Belt's a pretty nice spot to get your foothold in.
Good job in the Sun Belt's a good job right now, for sure.
Yeah, that's a solid place to move on your way up. John Summerall going to be at Tulane, replacing Willie Fritz, who, like, it felt like Willie Fritz was on those short lists forever. And it was just a matter of time before he ended up taking one of those jobs, and he lands at Houston, which I'm still – was Houston technically in the Big 12 last season?
Right. I mean, yeah, the basketball team's going to win the Big 12 this year.
It's so – I this whole process of, like, relearning the conference stuff, it's going to take me a minute. It's going to take me a minute to get there.
Wait until you see when Wake Forest holds Cal on a Friday night. In a conference game. That's really going to take you back. But jumping into, like, favorite hires, Nick, I think you – like, Tulane, like, John Summerall. They hired a coach that just went – that's, like, what is he, 23-4 through 2 years?
Yeah.
You know, that you couldn't do much better than that. Coming off 2 years where you were – you went to the playoff 1 year – or, the group of five spot,
yeah.
Six, and you were in the hunt all year the next year with Willie Fritz. And Summerall steps in, has experience at Tulane in the past. Like, that's one of my favorite hires here. And I think I've already mentioned that Sean Lewis is there too. I think that was a really good hire for San Diego State.
Yeah. The part with Tulane too, they're still in the American, correct?
That's right.
And that's another really valuable part, is that's a job where it's like, oh, so who do you have to beat to win your conference? Oh, yeah, you can take care of that. Right, that's a very winnable place for John Summerall. So I know there's a lot of Kentucky fans watching and listening who are thinking, well, like, we're big John Summerall fans. We want to see that ascendance continue. That's a place where he can have success and continue that climb in the geographic footprint. He's recruited well. He's done a good job in the transfer portal, getting Power 5 guys to come down. So I think they're moving in the right direction there. The one that I'm fascinated about, because we've seen it pop up at various times on the recruiting trail, Fran Brown going from Georgia's secondary coach to Syracuse, where we saw the ACC last year, right? Like that, it's not, you know, you don't have to Like, it doesn't take much to go from middle of the pack to 9-10 win team, right? And just the immediate bump they got, because he was, I think 24/7 said he was the best recruiter in college football last year for Georgia. I don't pretend to know how well his staff hires were there, if they're going to be rocking and rolling right away. But that feels like a place. I mean, who's Syracuse recruiting against in the Northeast? Penn State and Rutgers, right? Like,
right.
It's not that difficult to get your foothold in, get some players, and start winning some games in a very, very below average conference. So I think if Brown, he's hit the ground running, that can lead to some early wins. And I always felt like, too, that Dino had it. He just lost momentum. Like, it just kind of got away from him there at the end, because it's, you're in Syracuse, right? Like, you kind of have to just strike fast, strike hot, and then burn and turn. Because I mean, they were solid there for a few years with Dino, but it just kind of got away from them there at the end.
Yeah, I think that's why you pay attention to the recruiting rankings. Why did it maybe fall off? You just look at the roster; they just didn't have a talented roster, and so hot start. Kevin coming into the season with a good plan, I think, is all signs of good coaching. But when attrition starts hitting, you know, and you need depth, that goes down. That's what roster building is. Late in the year, and I think that's what kind of played out with Dino Babers. I have Fran Brown written down too, Nick. I really like the hire. He's from Camden, New Jersey. He's got strong New Jersey connections.
New Jersey's got some ball, some good.
Probably
going
to be able
too.
To get into Baltimore and DMV a little bit, get some players. And I think you look early. They got a couple 4-stars. Emmanuel Ross is a guy Kentucky recruited from, New Jersey receiver. He was committed to Stanford a long time. Brown got hired in like 2 days. Ross flipped to Syracuse. He brought in Elijah Robinson to be his defensive coordinator. Elijah Robinson was Texas A&M's interim coach. The plan was to keep him. That was a big goal for Elko. Brown hires him to be a defensive coordinator at Syracuse. So he brings some recruiting chops with him. They're going to be able to recruit. And he got, I believe, kind of like an NFL retread as an offensive coordinator. So that's going to be the one to see how that works. You know, my theory typically on first-time defensive head coaches, it takes them a little bit to kind of learn the, I think, balance. Mainly an SEC principle, we see first-time defensive head coaches really struggle that have never been defensive head coaches in their first year, but then they usually have a big year two, big year three. And so for Brown, that's going to obviously be an adjustment, but the ACC is different. And you're right. Like, to me, watching how he recruits, it's going to be big. Can you pull – if you can pull top 40 classes in the ACC consistently, it puts you in the top half to top 5 or 6 in that league of a 16-team league, right? So, yeah. Like, that's why SMU going in that league, I'm kind of optimistic about SMU. I don't know what the ACC is going to look like in 2 years, but if it stayed what it's at, like, SMU is going to be a factor in that conference because they can get players and they have money. Money is important in this sport. And so they're going to get players. And so for Syracuse, that's what you have to factor in. And then just what is the NIL commitment there? You know, what is the financial
right
measure there, or financial willingness there in Central New York to go win in college football? But I do like Fran Brown. I like the thinking by their AD. I like the move to go do it. It's like, hey, let's take a swing at this. And I think he makes sense from the aspect that, he was a hell of a recruiter at Georgia. He worked at Kirby Smart, and then he's from the area, the New Jersey area, that you have to recruit at Syracuse. If you're even going to have a shot in hell, you got to go get players from New Jersey, and Brown will give them that chance.
Let's discuss some odd fits, but first let's talk to you about our friends at FanDuel, where the madness is upon us. And I hate to disagree with our screen here, but now new customers are going to get $200 in bonus bets when you win your first $5 wager. Sign up at FanDuel.com/personnel or download the FanDuel app. It's very easy app to use. It's convenient. It's got all the best props, the best futures. And like it, this is my early NCAA tournament advice for futures too. Love betting for the next rounds, like a week ahead, right? Like, before the Final Four, you just bet your national championship winner because you're going to get better than two money line odds.
Right.
Like I love betting region winners when you're ahead of the Sweet 16. You can get some nice, tasty odds there. They have him on FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Sign up today. Win your first $5 wager. You can get $200 in bonus bets with FanDuel. FanDuel.com/personnel. Must be 21 plus, present in Kentucky. First online real money wager only. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Okay, I know that FanDuel has some early prop bets out for some of the Power Five. They don't have ones out for Conference USA, but I would maybe just... I would maybe take the under on Middle Tennessee State, who... I mean... Derek Mason's just trying to cash a check without moving, right? Like that he just is like, well, here's a, I can get paid for a couple of years before I get fired. They had Brent Stockstill coaching there for like 20 years. He was one of the longest tenured coaches.
Rick Stockstill, yeah.
Rick Stockstill, his kid was Brent. They had Rick Stockstill. I mean, he was there. I mean, 18 years. I think there was only four or five more longer tenured coaches than Stockstill, and he was doing it at. I've been to Middle Tennessee Stadium. It ain't much, right? I know Middle Tennessee, I think they were once the largest public school in the state, but there's not a lot of funding there. There's not a lot of money there. I know Derek Mason was built for that Vandy job. I just don't know how much he's got it in him to grind out some wins in Conference USA. And when you've seen some similar hires like this, I mean, outside of Skip Holtz winning some games, I mean, Skip Holtz didn't, he was never even at the Power Five level. He was fine at Louisiana Tech, but like Butch Jones, like that's just a complete failure at Arkansas State going the retread route there. I don't like the retread route. It just feels like it's going to be an odd, somebody's going to be watching some Tuesday night Conference USA football and they're going to be like, wait, Derek Mason coaches Middle Tennessee?
Yeah, yeah.
Gosh, they are terrible. You know, that's going to happen to a lot of you this year.
Yeah. First off, it was time for Middle Tennessee to make a change. They hadn't really been in contention to win that conference in a few years. They should be in the mix more than they were. And so I get making a move. But to hire Derek Mason was really kind of odd, Nick. Vanderbilt, the end was bad. Flamed out. Auburn was bad. Things weren't good. And Oklahoma State, the year he was there, it wasn't good.
Yeah.
So that's three, you know, years where the results weren't great. The last three coaching career years. And then you hire him to be a head coach. I just thought that was odd if you're Middle Tennessee. Now, it's harder at these G5 schools now to find coaches because I think some of the younger guys, like a Jason Candle, per se, are probably going to be a little more hesitant to take jobs like this because, like we've talked about, like I think this is going to be a real talking point as we get into this next cycle is just the in-house promotions and the hiring Power Five assistants that aren't even coordinators that you have to really think about if you're going to take a job like Middle Tennessee. So that you have to put that into account. But they still should be able to get someone maybe that's got their – they're more arrow pointing up more than Derek Mason, who seems to have what is an arrow pointing down at this point in his career. So, yeah, that was an odd fit, even though he's familiar with the area. That was odd to me.
Yeah. I also just questioned
the top one I wrote down, Nick. Go ahead.
I just questioned Middle Tennessee's commitment.
Right. Yeah.
Because they had a chance to go to the MAC with Western, said they were going to do it, and then pulled out at the last minute and kind of hosed Western over, which – hopefully Western's still able to get in because in an odd twist, the MAC invited UMass back. The UMass is the only school to ever get kicked out of the MAC. They've been mostly the same conference for the last like 30 years. I think they added Buffalo and they might have added one or two
Buffalo,
more
yeah.
here and there. But they added UMass briefly and they were so bad they got kicked out. I think even Cohen joked about that because he was on UMass's staff when that happened. But yeah, so hopefully Western's able to get in But a big suck it to Middle Tennessee State. All right, who you got next for your odd fit?
Yeah, I think Jonathan Smith at Michigan State. I think him leaving when he did made sense. But I think in hindsight, he wouldn't have left, right? Because I think he probably could have got the Washington or the UCLA gig, which seemed like better fits for him.
Yeah.
And then, like, Nick, when you look how Oregon State played, they just – like, they beat Oregon 2 years ago and didn't throw the ball in the second half. They just ran it. They had a badass offensive line, good tailbacks, and they just ran it down your throat. Like, that'll fit in the Big Ten, right? But it's can you find the lineman to do it, you know? Can you find the lineman? There's a lot of schools that play similar to that that are going to be recruiting the same region, looking for those linemen. So can you find them to do that? And then what does it look like if you can't find them? And so that, I wonder if he made a mistake by just not staying out west. You know, at Washington, you could have been at a school where you could have recruited a lot better and you would have been more comfortable. And for Michigan State, there's going to be high expectations there. And I just wonder if he regrets that, like, 2 months after taking that job, like, well, like, I could have got one of those and been in the same conference. That probably made a lot more sense. You're on mute, Nick.
You just got to know if Nick Saban's going to retire or not. Oh, that work? We're good? We're good now?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? Yeah, it's tough. But I like Jonathan Smith. I thought he did a good job. But I think it's fair to wonder about that fit.
Yeah. I feel like Manny Diaz is the right fit. But there's a seamless transition there. He's been in the league before, defensive minded coach, but.
Right.
Like, dude, if you couldn't do it in Miami, got screwed
in his last job. Yeah, I will say he got screwed by Miami. Like, they were publicly hoarding Cristobal while he was still, like, coaching. And, like, they weren't terrible. They were kind of – I mean, they're doing the same thing they are now, probably maybe a little bit better. It's not like
– Yeah.
You know, they – so they I did feel a little bad for him. But, yeah, I wonder that, like, you know – Duke leaves. He takes a star quarterback. Like, Manny Diaz isn't inheriting David Cutcliffe quarterback that Cutcliffe found that was awesome. You know, he's bringing in Malik Murphy. See if it works. But, I did find that interesting. To me, another one, Nick, I think Jed Fish is kind of an odd fit. We really didn't talk about Kalen DeBoer. And I think you can argue that's an odd fit. But I also think if you put Kalen DeBoer, if LSU hired him or if A&M hired him or if Florida got rid of Napier and they hired him, that's like applauded across the board, I feel like. But now that he's replacing Saban, it's kind of like, yeah. But a lot of that's not his fault. It's just the situation. But for me, Jeff Fish, like, Washington went to the national championship game last year. If you paid attention to the combine at all, there was Washington dudes everywhere. In Indianapolis. Like, their whole team is gone. Everybody that was part of that is gone. The guy who was calling plays is at the Seahawks facility right now across town. So, they just got totally gutted. And for Fish, comes from Arizona, he did a good job, but I think you could argue he had lightning in a bottle at Arizona because they were able to get McMillan, the receiver, and then he was a package deal, with Noah Fifita, who was a high school quarterback. And they just kind of took off. And now Washington, it's a total rebuild there because they lost everybody. And so they're probably in for a tough year one. And then does the expectations turn on him in a new conference? They're going to have to find their footing in the Big Ten, Washington. So that one, I wonder just for him, if it just, you know, if there's not a lot of patience for him because you're following a guy who was just an absolute rock star at Washington and just beat Oregon, one of the best Oregon teams, Nick, since Oregon started their run. He beat them twice to go to win the conference, to go undefeated, and to make it all the way to the title game. He beat that Oregon team twice, and that's their big, big rival. And so replacing that that's going to be hard, I think, for Fish. And Oregon's, they're not going nowhere. They're only going to get better. And so if you go in there, Oregon puts it on you a couple times, they're probably going to be pretty upset up there at Washington.
Yeah, and it at least made sense on paper, just because, yeah.
Yeah, it was a tough situation. Like, if you lose a coach, right. I just didn't know, I would have just promoted Grubb. Like, Hey, this is a good thing. Let's try to keep the band together, right? Let's try to keep some of these players here.
Mm-hmm. But it was ended up being a bit of a mess. Although Fish, Arizona was a very fun team to bet against the spread. I don't know what that record ended up being, but they were very profitable.
They got ATS hot at the end of the year, man. They were killing teams.
That was a lot of fun to put some money on them. Which I've got money on Florida right now, and they're just absolutely crushing Alabama. So, you know, Alabama just kind of pissing in the wind here late. I will say, I don't know if it's going to work, but I thought, like, getting Coach Sig at Indiana, like, good for you, Indiana. That feels like a decent hire. The one that is the most, like, Jeff Lebby to Mississippi State is just the most Mississippi State thing, right? Where he's kind of a, I don't know if it's a marked man, if you will, but like the whole connection with the Browns thing, like it's just, it was going to take a Mississippi State to hire him.
Just the veer and shoot. Like you see what Heupel's doing at Tennessee. We see this offense sprinkled. So Mississippi State's going to go take their swing with it. Ole Miss is running a version of it. He was at Ole Miss. So they're familiar with the state, so they're going to go try and do that. And we'll see if it works with them. That was just kind of, to me, like a middle-of-the-road hire. Like, I think it adds up why you would do it. It's, you know, you could definitely – that it's a coin flip. Like, you could see that being great, or you could see it, you know, flaming out. And so that's where I was at – with that. Bill O'Brien was the other one I had, just because, like, you know, this is a guy who was at Alabama, was a head coach of the Houston Texans, and was with the Patriots for really the last decade. And so you're going from that to be the head coach at Boston College that has really, you know, the money situation is tough. Recruiting there is tough. Like, you could argue Boston College is more tradition than Syracuse, but I think you could argue that it maybe is a little harder to recruit to. Than Syracuse. They're probably about the same. But, I mean, they're both always down there in the bottom of the recruiting ranking. So you're going into that. And if you're Bill O'Brien, you're entering a conference. You're going from Ohio State offensive coordinator under Ryan Day, got a team loaded to bear, maybe to go win the national championship. You're going from that to go to a Boston College team that conference might be dead in 2 years. You know, I just thought that when you break it down, why he described why he hired it, his family settled in Boston. Like they weren't moving to Columbus. Like he was, mm-hmm. They were keeping their house in Boston, and he was going to have a condo in Columbus or whatever. And so, from that aspect, it makes sense for him. But that's a huge change, dude. Like to go from the NFL and then Alabama with Bryce freaking Young for 2 years, and then to go to Boston College. That's going to be a big change. So I wonder if, like, what that fit is there. And even his college experience was at Penn State, which just has an extreme talent advantage over
Boston. Yeah, well, Boston and it was college. Also –
But it's Penn State was at probation, so maybe that's the sell there.
Right.
He's won with less before in a big conference.
Yeah, and it's different, but you don't see too many guys who are older who – Like, because Rich Brooks feels like an exception to a rule where he had success despite being at the end of his career and seemingly already peaked at bigger brand names previously. You know, going to the Rose Bowl with Oregon. I know Oregon wasn't what they are now. And then spending time in the NFL. That's kind of what Bill O'Brien, I mean, he's had somewhat similar stuff. Did you see the picture of the people in the crowd at his intro press conference too? It was just all dudes.
I did not.
It was a bunch of old white dudes with patterned shirts and sweater vests on. You know, like they all had on their uniform. But yeah, all right. Starting to kind of wrap things up here. Any fun new coordinators that we got to keep an eye on, Luckett?
Yeah, I think the big one, like, what is the ripple effect from Alabama losing Ryan Grubb? Like, is there a big, like, does that have a big impact on Kalen DeBoer's tenure? Like, what if Grubbs turns out to be a rock star and it's like an NFL coach in 3 years? Like that's one to watch, I think. I mean, Bobby freaking Petrino is back at Arkansas, which I still like. It's hard to believe that is a thing. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it's worth noting that Hugh Freeze is going to call plays at Auburn. That's going to be a point of discussion. Mm-hmm. Seven different play callers in 7 years for the Tigers. At Alabama, it's opening opportunities. It's opportunities for Freeze to keep his job for more than 2 or 3 years. So he has to be on it as the Tigers play caller this year.
Yeah, it's a huge year, right? And they should have a bounce back year, but yeah, it's a huge year. Nick, Mike Denbrock, did an awesome job with Desmond Ridder at Cincinnati. Did an awesome job with Jaden Daniels at LSU. He's going back to Notre Dame to work with Marcus Freeman. Like that seems like a hell of a hire, and to see what maybe he could do with Riley Leonard. Like I wouldn't be surprised. We'll look up Notre Dame's 11-0, and you're like, whoa. Riley Leonard's awesome. Oh, why, how did this happen? Well, Mike Denbrock. It was maybe the best hire of this cycle. And then some younger guys, some I think, Heisman to keep an eye on.
Odds to sprinkle in there on Riley Leonard. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you look at Notre Dame's schedule, it's very, very manageable. Like, if you just look at it on paper. So that's something to keep an eye on. I think, like, Tim Lester, I think, was a sensible hire for Iowa, even though it took seven years. I think that made some sense. And then John David Baker, Nick, is 33. Go ahead.
I was just going to point out with your best friend Shane Beamer, he lost his special teams coordinator. So how much of Beamer ball?
I like that hire by Buffalo.
How much of that hire, or how much of it was on Beamer versus how much of it was, and now his name's escaped me, how much of that falls on his shoulders?
Pete Limbo.
Pete Limbo. That something just to keep an eye on looking forward.
And then Nick, John David Baker spent the last 3 years at Ole Miss working for Lane Kiffin. He's going to be calling plays for East Carolina this year. That's one I think to keep an eye on. Like if he does well, that guy's going to be an SEC offensive coordinator like next year potentially. Mm-hmm. So that's one like a name to keep an eye on. Like a younger guy. Nebraska, like Matt Rhule said enough, Marcus Satterfield, you're not coaching quarterbacks anymore. They went and got like a former NFL guy there for probably the right reasons. Jeff Collins is now Mac Brown's new defensive coordinator at North Carolina. Just continues his weird kind of hiring spree. And then another young guy that was at Western Carolina calling plays the last couple of years that Pat Narduzzi hired, Cade Bell, only 31 years old, but he led like a consecutive top 10 scoring offenses in FCS. So Pitt's changing it up on offense, going really, really young. And then some big names, Tom Allen, defensive coordinator at Penn State now, Chip Kelly, obviously at Ohio State, and Penn State grad Kansas offensive coordinator Andy Koltunecki, who a lot of people really like. Just so seeing what they can do. But that was really, I think, you kind of look at the coordinated churn. That was really that, and then Deion kind of doing this NFL thing with Pat Shurmur, and then he hired the Bengals secondary coach to be the defensive coordinator. And so he's trying to run an NFL program, and we'll see how that works with their first year in the Big 12. But that was one of my big points. I think the big one was Denbrock. Like, if you're investing in someone, I would invest in Riley Leonard and Notre Dame this preseason. I think that was a pretty huge hire for Marcus Freeman.
Well, I'm sure our audience will be keeping a keen eye on it. I think it's time for us to depart. I don't know about you, but I'm running out of steam, Mr. Luckett. I have a feeling the coaching carousel might end up popping up at some other time. We're 2 weeks away from the start of Kentucky football spring practice. And you could become a dad again at any given moment. So who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? The madness is starting next week. I'd imagine we're going to try to do podcasts earlier in the week. If you're tied up, I'll find somebody else to talk a little bit of football with me. But Luckett, if you do have to go under center, best of luck. And just don't fumble the snap, okay? Okay.
Right. Nick, I think I lost sound here. I'm not sure if you can hear me.
I can hear you. I don't know if you can hear me or not. But it sounds like you're coming through a different microphone now, just in time for us to end the show. So this has been a lot of fun. I hope you all enjoyed our coaching carousel show. For Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Roush. Go Cats and go Kroger.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.